Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. It's good to have you all with us today. We were going to have Jahan Hafiz, but she hasn't. We haven't found her. She's somewhere looking in the streets of Cairo. Don't know where she is. When we find her, we'll have her on. But we can have you on at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, and just talk a bit about what's happening in our city. We had a lot of interesting calls yesterday, I thought, talking about visions for Baltimore and what Baltimore could become. Where it might go, and we only got through not even all the callers. You know, so many people were left hanging on that time because we had so many people calling in with ideas of where we could go with this city. And I'd like to hear your thoughts now. Maybe some thoughts on where you think Baltimore should go. Other ideas you've been thinking about in the news. Looking at what's in the news. I was trying to look in the Baltimore Sun to see what's there, but there's not much there usually. There's just headlines about the Ravens, and there's not much to talk about there. I don't do they win one week and they lose another week. But there's a lot going on in the city. I saw today that there were a lot of blogs about the Baltimore Development Corporation and what they're doing and what they're not doing and how they're using the money and how or misusing the money. And there's a public meeting tomorrow about privatizing rec centers. This can be held between 6:30 and 8:30 at the Chick Webb Recreation Center. That is something that I think really gets to a lot of people. Here we have a city with a lot of kids who live in poverty, a lot of kids who look for things to do after school. There are no after-school programs, or very few. And we're closing rec centers or trying to sell them off to private entities. We can't seem to find the money for that. And it's interesting that so few groups apparently have applied to take over these rec centers. We know a few have. I've been involved in one or two who have asked for their help. But this is a really big thing. I think many of you who listen to this program think a lot about rec centers in your neighborhoods and what you think the city's responsibility is and why it is the city can't seem to find the wherewithal to keep them open. We can hire more and more police. But we can't seem to keep open a rec center. And one of the problems with rec centers is that if you take over a rec center, there were groups about to do it, and at the last minute, after they had everything lined up, it kind of fell apart. And it fell apart because you apparently have to have a $3 million commercial liability insurance. And that is just, I think, prohibitive for community groups and church groups and nonprofits to do. I wonder maybe if one of those groups that have tried to do that. I'd like to hear about those stories from you all at 410-319-8888. That particular thing, you know, maybe the city should be thinking about taking over that part of it. Maybe the city should be paying the commercial liability insurance. And so, you know, those premiums are like $3,000 or so. That's a lot of money. If the city took that over, more groups could actually take over those rec centers and really maybe perform some services. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with neighborhood groups running them, but we perhaps have to have a little bit more from the city to get that done. So there'll be a meeting tomorrow night about that. The mayor is saying that the city can no longer afford to operate all 55 rec centers and might have to close 10 facilities after the first of the year. Well, that's a lot. And says a lot about our kids. And there's going to be a $300,000 shortfall in operating expenses. But we sure did put on that Grand Prix race, and I'm not sure what that Grand Prix race has done for this city, except put it into debt, maybe, and having the Grand Prix not pay its bills. So let me know how you feel about that. 410-319-8888. I think there are things, you know, but we did elect the mayor again. We put her back in office. We had a lot of people complaining here about Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake during the course of the campaign, but it didn't seem to amount to much because when it was all said and done, when the smoke was clear and the vote was over, she was there in office. And so I wonder what you think about all that and where we are headed and why you think that happened that way. 410-319-8888. Is a number here. But this rec center thing is big. I think that we can't take care of our kids in this city. It says a great deal about that. The city just settled another $107,000 and two more police lawsuits, $3.5 million this year so far. The city's had to pay in in wrongful arrests and beatings of the citizens of Baltimore. And I think that kind of deserves a stronger look. Your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Let's open the phones and let's go to Tamik in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just wanted to speak about the rec center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm president of a PTO at a Baltimore City public school, and kind of enrages me is the apathy of.
Whoop! I think we lost you, Tamika. It was a cell phone drop, but if you can call back, I want to hear what you think about apathy. And I think there is too much apathy out there. People need to stand up and say something and do something. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to you, Tamik, if you can call back in. Michael, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, Michael. Welcome.
Good. Listen, that Baltimore Grand Prix was the biggest faux pas, I think, ever in Baltimore City. This is a total waste of money, a total waste of time. It went to a segmented population about who really wanted to be involved in it, who to see it. I mean, I made every effort to stay away from it, not because of traffic, because of the nonsense. It's just a temerity to say that they're going to take away your recreation centers and other things, helping people for that nonsense. I didn't vote for her, my friend, and I will not vote for her again. And God knows, I hope something comes better than what we have now. So I'm going to hang up. It's the rest of your show. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. 410-319-8888. Well, did you vote or not vote for the mayor? And what are your thoughts about that? I think that the Grand Prix itself, it's interesting. If you go to Europe or listen to people in Europe, they were all excited that Baltimore City had a Grand Prix because it's a huge deal in many places. But the Grand Prix does not seem to be run very well as a business. It loses money everywhere. And I think the city even admitted they couldn't do the due diligence that they thought they should do. And people who were downtown, who saw it, had fun. But all the money was supposed to come to this town. It didn't happen. The restaurants in South Baltimore and downtown and in Little Italy, none of those 100,000 people who showed in Baltimore went to those restaurants because the people put on the Grand Prix served their own food. Now, that didn't make much sense. It doesn't do much for our city. I cut down a lot of trees and got in our way, and it sounds really glitzy and glorious, but maybe it really didn't amount to a hill of beans for us, except a waste. Now, if you voted for the mayor, I'd like to hear your thoughts. If you didn't vote for the mayor, well, I wonder why you think most of the city did. If so many people seem to be upset, maybe people weren't upset enough and they wanted really to keep things steady after the last mayor, Sheila Dixon, was thrown out of office and people were kind of disgusted. And I think maybe people just in the community here just wanted to have a steady eddy to keep things going and alive. Well, what do you think? 410-319-8888. We started out talking about rec centers, and I think that the issue with rec centers to me is a very serious one. We are talking about kids who don't have nowhere to go after school. Rec centers playing the role of places where children can go, for senior citizens to go, and we can't seem to afford to do that. The other piece of news I just popped up here today, I just saw that. Michael Jackson's doctor got 4 years in prison. Well, we had a long talk about that. Many people seem to be outraged about what happened there. That just came across the wires a little bit ago, and I thought I'd share that with you all. Let's go to Scott. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm glad you're talking about these issues. I actually didn't vote for the mayor. I'm a Green Party. I registered for the Green Party. And I actually showed up to the polls in November to vote, but I just cast a blank ballot rather than just stay at home. So I think it's, you know, I think it's important to see where the city's priorities are and that we continue to give tax breaks to developers through these pilot programs and the TIFs, and yet we say that you can't afford to keep, you know, rec centers open, can't afford school repairs, and I just think we'll continue getting politicians who sort of satisfy the demands of the developers that place them in office until we sort of start to see a groundswell and a public outcry. I think movements like, you know, Occupy Baltimore are really important. And certainly I was down at the protest last week with Build for Harbor East. So I just think, you know, to keep the rec centers open, it would be so simple if we just stopped giving these tax breaks to developers like Patarakis and other people down in Harbor and Harbor East, where you start to see, you know, that we have this 30% vacancy rate, and yet we continue to sort of give this blank check to developers. So,
Before we go to our next caller, I'm curious why you think that there isn't more outrage about things like that, why people don't get their back up over those issues. Clearly they don't, or we would see some changes.
I missed the first part of that. Can you say
why you think people do not get their back up around the issues you're talking about?
Why are people not rallying around these issues?
Right.
I'm not sure. I've only been in Baltimore for 3 years, so I can't exactly say. I think just so I wish I had more of an informed opinion, but I just do think there is that level of apathy and that people don't think that these issues can be changed. And I'm not exactly sure the sort of historical roots of that, but I do think that there's just this legacy of sort of being beaten down so long. People don't really think that things can be changed, or there's just this acceptance that this is the way that it has to be. So I think it'll be time, and I actually think it's vital that we have organizations like BILD and movements like Occupy Baltimore just to start giving people a voice and sort of empower them and strengthen them and make them believe that they actually can make change. So
all right.
I think it'll just take time.
Scott, thanks so much. Appreciate your thoughts. What do you
think?
Are you one of those folks who's upset about things? Things are going well. 410-319-8888. Keith in Northeast Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. Keith, how are you doing?
Mark, I look at the Baltimore Brew, and I was looking at the tax incentives for the developers. You have a lot of people that under the opinion that the mayor is doing such a great job. When I look at having one private entity come up with $3 million for liability for these rec centers, when I'm 50, and God knows since I've been a child, I always thought city recreation was part of city planning, city government to keep them the masses of children, to give them things to do, and for the seniors also. But my only problem with this whole thing is that this is the way I see Baltimore from just looking at that article in the Brew this morning, is that it's almost like Harbor East is like it's going already to succeed from Baltimore. I mean, have its own mayor, own police department. It's almost like, you know, it'll be like Towson South. I mean, that's how they're making it into a corporate and highly glitzy residential area and a lot of the normal people and the middle class people here in Baltimore are just going to be just frozen out. And I just think it's just so much put into that one area of the city, and I don't really understand. And I'm gonna let y'all have a callers call in, but thank you
Keith. 410-319-8888 is the number. I mean, I think that there's, you know, there's always been, as far back as I can remember, back in the 1980s, I helped run the ill-fated campaign for then Judge Billy Murphy when he ran for mayor. And in that campaign, we created a slogan about the outer harbor. We have a city that needs to take care of the outer harbor, not just the inner harbor. And that was back in 1983. And when we, in that campaign, or 82, I should say, we ran that campaign, there was some resonance there, but, you know, it still didn't pick up. There was a lot of outrage about all the money going through downtown, all the money going to the inner harbor, all the money going into hotels. But there is, it seems to me there's not a collective anger about that in the city. Maybe it's just not real to most people. I'd like to hear what you think. 410-319-8888. I mean, you know, it's the guest we had on last night. We're talking about all kinds of ideas to put people to work in Baltimore and to make this a more livable city, which means you have to figure out where you want to allocate those dollars. Is it more important to give money to a developer downtown to build a new hotel? Or is it more important to take those thousands of acres of empty lots and turn them into livable spaces for people, turn them into urban farms, figure out a way to create a system of agriculture in the city that actually gives people healthy food to eat? What we do about our schools? is part of that equation as well. I mean, you know, it's I'll be leading a seminar a week from Monday that you all are invited to about the future of Baltimore education and of education period in this country with some national figures. And, you know, it seems to me that in many ways we are in a system where we are teaching for tests and not really teaching the critical knowledge our kids need. You know, it's the difference between what a child learns in the private school system in Baltimore and what children learn in our public system. So let me get a call in here and then we'll talk. It's at Tion, 410-319-8888. Tion in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, first time on the air ever.
You're on the air.
So I just tuned in and I heard you talk about the mayor. I just want to know, and I heard you ask a caller about why does he think people don't do anything about this. And I think it's because people are scared.
Scared?
Yes. Because these people on this side are so connected. And if you do something, I feel like people think that they'll be out. Somehow they'll be damaged if they decide to do something.
Hmm. You mean people would be kind of physically hurt or would be hurt in terms of their work or job? What do you mean by hurt?
Oh, work and job. No, I don't think physically somebody.
Yeah.
Your future will be dead.
Well, and I think people also just feel like when they vote for somebody, it doesn't make that much difference. You know, people don't see the changes they think they should see, which is why you have such a low voter turnout. That's the real issue. I mean, when you have 11% of the people coming out for an election, that doesn't say there's much confidence in what we can do and what we face.
No, and it's funny. I work for the state, and nobody knew that day there was voting in the city because already everybody assumed that the mayor was already a mayor. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And how can you not know there is a voting for a mayor in the same town? Everybody knew she was going to win.
Right. I think, right. There was very little doubt in most people's minds that she was going to win. I agree.
People don't vote anymore for their ideology. People have thrown out that card. It's like, oh, I cannot do that anymore. You know who you are. That's ridiculous. Nobody cares. Nobody cares because everybody assumes stuff. You know?
Well, Tiana, I appreciate the call. And let me see how listeners feel about what you said. I think that that's true, though, that people do not are not voting ideology anymore. They're voting for some unfathomable reasons sometimes. And I think that's because a lot of times our political parties are not standing for anything that make people want to vote for them or fight for them in this town. Let's see what Janelle in Baltimore thinks. Thank you, Tion. Janelle, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Very well. Welcome.
Good, good. I was calling because I wanted to speak a little bit about, talking about voting for the mayor and not voting for the mayor. And I really think it doesn't come down to that issue. Because politicians are not always going to do what's in the best interest of the people. And when that happens, I think it's our responsibility to stand up and speak out about it. So they're closing rec centers, and that's a financial benefit, but we're not looking at the detriment that it's causing when we're facing cancer rates, we're facing diabetes, we're facing violence, and all of those are issues that rec centers being open is a preventative method. And so when you're looking at the financial gain, you also have to look at the detriment that you're and what the message is that you're saying. So you're saying, I want to save money, but I don't care about cancer incidents. I don't care about obesity. I don't care about the increase in violence. And so I don't care about diabetes. And so when we're looking at that, it comes down to the people, whether you voted for the mayor or you didn't, taking a stand on the issue and saying, what is it that we have to do? Is it signing waivers to make sure that these rec centers can stay open,
mm-hmm.
so that it's not an insurance issue? Is it looking for funding? Is it seeing what the city can provide, but not just saying, okay, well, I voted for her, so that's just what it's going to be?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that people I think in many ways it's beyond the elected officials. It's what people stand up to push and demand some change and demand some control.
Absolutely.
And I think people should do that with their rec centers. I mean, I think that if the problem is the $3,000 or $5,000 it costs for somebody to put up the liability insurance, then maybe the city should pay for that liability insurance and actually let neighborhood groups run rec centers that could make a difference in people's lives. I'm not necessarily opposed to people running rec centers that are nonprofits and community organizations, but I think that I'm not opposed to that at all. But I think that there has to be some help from the city, and I think you're right. I think this is when you say you're saving money on one end of the budget, it's much more than that. It has to do with the complications that set in once you do cut that money, and what people lose. You know, I think your point was very cogent and very clear, and I appreciate the call. Mary, you're on the air.
Yes. I did not vote for the mayor, and I worked very hard for a candidate that I thought would be the best person for the job. And I think the reason why people vote the way they vote, because I really feel we have an ignorant election. We don't know what to vote for. You know, We vote for popularity. We vote for who got the most signs, and anything except who's going to make my life in this city better. And when someone is running with all the backing and money that she ran with, you knew she couldn't be in the interest of the poor people of Baltimore. And the majority of the people in Baltimore are poor.
And the majority of those poor people don't vote.
Huh?
And the majority of those poor people do not vote.
They don't. Some of them don't vote. And the reason why they don't vote, I just said an ignorant electorate. Didn't I just say that?
You did. But they don't vote.
First of all, we need to educate the people as to why you vote. Okay. What you vote for should be in the interest of how it's going to affect your life personally and the people that you think will do the things that will improve the quality of life for you. Okay? But
right.
People don't think that way. Well, I told you, they vote for anything except that. And the most popular candidate, the one with the most signs out, that's the one who has the most money from big business, which means that candidate is in the interest of big business because she has to pay her dues. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why.
Well, I think that
we have the conditions that we have.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that there's too much corporate big money in politics now, and controlling our politics, which is a huge part of the issue, and people see that and feel it and feel there's no reason to vote. That's why people don't. It's not just people who vote. It's not just people don't vote for the certain against their interests. People don't vote. Period.
But they have to see. To me, you have to know that the only way you're going to change things is through the political system. I think they ought to see that, and if they don't, then we need to start voter education.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Across the board, voter education. People ought to have little centers, like they're trying to close the rec center. That will be a good place for people to go and have classes on the reasons why we vote, why your vote is important and can be important. See? But people will tell you, my one vote don't count. Your one vote counts because it adds up to the thousands of votes that come on a particular issue that will address the needs of the people. And if that's your need and my need, and we all vote for it, we will get it. You see what I'm saying?
No, I hear you, Mary. I hear you.
People don't get it.
Right. I think
they don't get that.
Right. Well, I appreciate the call. I think that thing that what you're saying is real, and I think that on the other hand, I do think that people don't vote because they don't see a change, no matter who they vote for.
We seem to be consistently voting for the wrong person.
Well, because almost every person you vote for is backed by corporate money. I mean,
not every person. There are people out there who run; they just don't win. But there are people out there who are not backed by corporate money, who, if we voted for them, would be able to do something for us. Every single candidate is not backed by corporate money.
Not every single candidate, but I'm saying the politics is so riddled with that, it's very difficult to get beyond it for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, I really you think deeply about this. I appreciate you being part of the show.
Oh, Thank you.
Thank you. We have Jihan Hafiz, who was going to join us at the top of the hour from Egypt. There was a phone problem. Has just called in. So let's get to her for a minute here and see what is going on in Cairo. And Jihan, how are you?
Yes, I'm well, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. Jihan is the Cairo correspondent for the Real News Network, which is, I think, one of the best international news operations in the world. And Jahan's reports have just been amazing, so we wanted to...
Thank you, Mark.
Well, they have been. I mean, you really work hard at this. And dangerously as well, I might add.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. I know the elections are over in Cairo right now. And I'm curious what it is that... what has happened since the end of the election? Clearly, the results are nowhere close to being in.
That's true. The results are not close to being in, but just half an hour ago, actually 2 hours ago, very violent street battles broke out at Abd al-Manan Riyadh, which is the beginning of Tahrir Square, between vendors and protesters in Tahrir. Now, there's lots of dispute about whether these are vendors or whether these are pro-government thugs. And apparently it started around 10 o'clock our time here in Cairo, when the security committee, it's an independent committee set up in Tahrir of a number of protesters who have been staging sit-ins for the past week. They decided that the vendors should not be in the square, that they counteract their attempts to remove the Supreme Council of Armed Forces. And there were also rumors that they were selling drugs in the square. And when they tried to remove them, very violent clashes broke out between them. There were reports, and I heard gunfire throughout that area. I saw Molotov cocktails being thrown left and right. There were also fireworks being shot at close range towards the demonstrators. A number of people were injured. There have been no confirmed deaths. This is post-election violence, if you will, and many people in the square believe it's an attempt by the government to delegitimize what's happening in Tahrir, which has been a week-long sit-in since violent clashes between the police and the army. So in the backdrop of what many are calling the first democratic elections, the first free elections in Egypt, you still have chaos. And you still have lots of violence taking place throughout the country that's really shadowed by this belief that the elections have been democratic, and they have been. I have to say, I covered the elections last year, and the turnout was much higher. People were more excited, and we definitely saw a number of enthusiastic candidates and political parties coming out to give their support to the elections as well as voters. However, despite this, there are some in Tahrir who discredit these elections because they believe a democratic process, such as an electoral process, cannot take place under a military junta.
I'm sorry we didn't connect earlier, but you've covered so much. You were detained and arrested on the flotilla to Gaza when you were covering it. You've covered what went on in Libya. And this whole Arab spring, this whole Arab uprising from the streets up, you've been intimate with it. I'm curious your analysis when you look at the bits from things you've seen in different places you've been in covering. What you see the connections are? What do you think is there a running theme, a cord that ties all these together?
I think the theme is really desperation and hopelessness, and that's what's led to the Arab Spring. And you've had desperate situations in all of the Arab countries where people feel helpless, hopeless, unemployment is skyrocketing in many of these areas, police repression is rampant, torture is systematic. And I think all of these elements in all of these Arab countries, which have been led actually for decades by tyrants, most of them supported by the U.S. government, I think that desperation has really led people to fear nothing, to be fearless. And that's what we're still seeing on the streets in Cairo. I mean, I can't believe some of these people who continue to go back into the tear gas and who continue to fight the police despite the massive injuries and deaths that were taking place. But it really has a lot to do with fearlessness, and it has to do with desperation. People here don't have jobs. What you see on TV and what you see Al Jazeera's major networks covering are the elite neighborhoods, the rich neighborhoods, the middle-income neighborhoods, where they do have money and they do have the ability to feed themselves daily. But Egypt is a very poor country, and people here live well underneath the poverty line. I've been to a number of these neighborhoods where people live in garbage dumps, and they don't eat, and they eat meat twice a month. And to be quite frank, it's the Muslim Brotherhood that caters to these poor neighborhoods, which is why when I went to the poor neighborhoods yesterday and today, overwhelming majority were voting for the Brotherhood because of this desperation. So I think a lot of it has to do with being fed up and being in solidarity with the desperation that's been happening across the Arab world.
Jahan, it's really been a pleasure. I'm sure it's not a longer conversation today, but I do look forward to setting up a time we can really have you on for a lengthy period and maybe organize something we can tape during the day when it's less late for you. I know it's late in Cairo. And I just want to really encourage people to go to Real News Network and see the work of Jahan Hafiz, H-A-F-I-Z. It's remarkable work and of a daring, thoughtful, and capable journalist. Jahan, it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Mark. I really appreciate it.
And we look forward to doing this for a longer stint soon.
Very soon, inshallah. Thank you.
Inshallah.
Take care.
We're going to have to take a break here in a minute. We're taking a break now? Yes, we are. Okay, we have to take a break, and we're going to come right back to your calls and to our next guest. So stay with us.